Well, you know what, Trevor? I was at the polo club.
Oh, really?
I was, and I jumped right on the table.
What did you do that for?
And then I screamed at the top of my lungs I fornicated right in her vagina.
Oh, dear heavens.
He did. Welcome to the next installment of your favorite podcast.
Episode 6.
Are we on 6 already?
6-pack tonight.
Oh, right on. Cool. This episode is fueled by, I'm sipping on nothing but the good Sir Jameson.
Just getting right after it. And I mixed together a, what'd you call it, an angry butt?
Angry butt.
So I got a little bit of Angry Orchard hard cider and a Black Butte Porter. It's pretty delicious. It's, I'm enjoying it.
Ooh, pause while I lick a shot out of my Falcon's glass. Oh, woo! What's today? September 19th?
Today is, yeah, Friday, September 19th. And for those that weren't aware, today is National Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Arr.
So, avast ye me mateys.
Shiver me timbers. Thar be some nice booty over there. So yeah, talk like a pirate. We'll be talking like a pirate sporadically throughout this podcast. Saw this new movie in theaters. It's Pirates of the Caribbean 4. It was a Korean bootleg.
Really? Is it the same? Is it Johnny Depp still?
Nah, it's a little bit different.
Huh.
This one's rated R.
Well played indeed.
So let's go ahead and get this thing started. Enough messing around. What you heard at the top of the podcast there was our take on the latest Jameis Winston story.
Yeah, that was basically, it may have seemed funny, sounded funny, but the fact of the matter is Jameis Winston actually did exactly, not exactly, but he did what we were joking around about. A couple of days ago, he was out in the student union area or something on campus, and he just took it upon himself to hop on top of a table and scream out that now popular internet catchphrase that's been showing up in different live news broadcasts.
And dude is like the equivalent of a photobomb, which I guess they're calling it what are they calling it? To me, it's an F right in the P bomb.
Yeah, F-er right in the P bomb.
F-er right in the P. But yeah, Buddy was at in the middle of a busy commons area, hopped up on a table and let everyone know just exactly what he did on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's as soon as that happened, I mean, well, let's get the other formal stuff out of the way. He's been suspended. He's going to be out for the first half of the Clemson game this weekend. So, you know, whether that's enough punishment, I don't know. I don't know.
Do you think that that's actually going to make an impact on the game? Do you think Clemson stands a chance to win playing an FSU team without Jameis for the first half?
I mean, I'm sure that they'll have a better, a better chance. I mean, Florida State hasn't exactly, run away from teams like a lot of people were predicting that they would. So it could be, it could be one of those situations where the offense is just completely out of sync, and that could be, maybe things just really go downhill in the first half, and Jameis can't, come back and engineer a comeback.
Clemson put up 30-something points on him. That was like 35, 30. I don't remember. The point is, they put up 30 points against the Georgia defense, which is very porous. But I could see them maybe jumping out in front to a 10-point lead at halftime, which I don't think will be enough to win the game, personally. So.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, even without Jameis Winston, I mean, there's still a great defense there. I mean, you still have a great supporting cast. It's never easy to replace your starting quarterback.
They lost their top running back, Devontae Freeman's now a Falcon.
Yeah, he was drafted. I mean, their best receiver, Benjamin, has been was drafted. So I mean, they lost. There's a lot of, he was definitely going to be doing a lot more of the heavy lifting. Coming back this year, but I mean. It's hard for me to say that that it's going to cause Florida State to lose this game.
So let me ask you this. How do you think this impacts the rest of Jameis's career? at Florida State. I mean, do you think he leaves as a junior still? He's a sophomore this year.
Yeah, I think he's a redshirt sophomore.
Yeah.
So I think that he's eligible because because he has been in college for 3 years because he redshirted his freshman year.
So he's eligible to leave next year.
Yeah, so he's age eligible. I want to say Manziel did the same thing, or did he leave as a redshirt junior?
I couldn't tell you, honestly. I didn't start following Johnny Hot Dog until last year, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, but I think that I think he was going to leave regardless. I mean, I figure he was going to declare this year just because he's probably going to be. I mean, he's going to be one of the top, probably one of the top 5 to 10 picks. Even with this, even with this latest debacle, I mean, you're going to start. The questions will start coming up as far as maturity level. Self-control.
So he's going to declare for the 2015 class?
I think he'll declare after this year.
Man, I think that's a mistake. But, hey, what
I mean,
do I
it's
know?
It's just one of those things, strike when the iron's hot. I mean, there's no other major names, at least so far, that will be coming out.
There's a crop of quarterbacks in the SEC that have all... And I didn't realize how many had sat behind a starter for 3 years until they mentioned it in, I want to say, the Clemson game. So Clemson's quarterback is also a sat for 3 years. He's in his senior year kind of guy. South Carolina's quarterback is the same way, as is Hudson Mason.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys. I mean, like we discussed in a previous episode, there was a lot of above-average quarterbacks that were willingly biding their time, while they had more talented quarterbacks ahead of them.
Waiting in the wings.
Yeah. I mean, it's worked in the past. I mean, you've got guys, for the Bulldog listeners, DJ Shockley did that for 4 years. He waited behind. I mean, it's hard to ever argue starting over David Green, who set so many records during his time at Georgia. And now you have Hudson Mason doing the same thing after Aaron Murray reset a lot of those records. One other one that I saw from a TV broadcast was T. Martin. He sat behind.
Right, Peyton Manning.
He sat behind Peyton.
Did he win the national championship?
And he won the Natty. Yeah,
The Natty in 98 with T. Martin. That's right.
Yeah, that was a loaded. I forget the running backs, but that was during the heyday.
Is that Jamal Lewis?
I can't remember if it was Jamal Lewis or if it was like a Travis Henry type. I mean, in my recent memory, one of the high points of the Volunteer football program. But yeah, anyway, I looked him up real quick. Jameis Winston is a redshirt sophomore, so he should be draft eligible after completing this year.
I think this incident, along with the other Jameis incidents, aren't helping his draft stock at all. Where's Bridgewater? Is he coming out in 2015 or is he 2016?
No, he came out. He went to... Who picked him up? Didn't Minnesota?
Oh, not Bridgewater. Who am I? Braxton Miller. That mixed up.
Well, I was thinking, I was like, wait a second. He went. Well, with Braxton Miller, he's a whole other situation now because now you have got the shoulder injury.
But how old is he?
I'll take a look. I'll take a look real quick.
I'm just trying to think of quarterbacks coming out of this class. Mariota.
Mariota's the only guy that really comes to mind. Even what's his name down at UCLA, he got injured. Hundley,
right.
Hundley got injured. You've got the dude at Baylor who's going to be the stat guy in that in Art Briles offense. So, I mean, there's going to be some guys.
We need a stat guy in our offense. Because instead of fumbling around with these names ages.
Yeah, Braxton Miller is a senior this year. So out. He's out regardless. Unless he gets like medical redshirt this year and then he wants to stick around.
Nah.
But
he'll probably go the route of Terrell Pryor and do relatively nothing in the league.
Yeah, more than likely. Ohio State does put together a lot of NFL talent, but quarterback is not a position of strength.
Negative.
Offensive line.
A.J. Hawk?
Linebackers.
Buckeye.
Yeah.
Running backs.
Running back Eddie George.
Eddie George.
Maurice Claret, if you want to count.
Maurice. Mm-hmm. Maurice. Maurice AK-47 Claret.
There you go.
Maurice Orange Jumpsuit Claret.
I think he was trying to make a comeback, trying to get on an NFL roster, but apparently, obviously, that hasn't panned out thus far. So
what else happened? I'm sure that all the SEC detractors out there were in a nail biter last night. Kansas State just about upset Auburn.
Yeah, Kansas State just about effed them right in the pee.
Right in the pee.
I didn't watch the game. I was watching the Falcons dismantle the Bucks.
Which, in retrospect, was the worst of two games to watch.
Yeah, it was, because that Auburn game was, you know, went down to the final quarter. That's the first time that Auburn has won a game against, I want to say, a top 10, maybe top 15, ranked opponent on the road since, like, the 80s.
I was not aware of that.
I wasn't either. I figured they would have rattled, you know, off some wins, in the last, even during the national title run.
So maybe, as it turns out, that Malzahn year last year wasn't a fluke. Maybe this team is back. Who
Could
knows?
Be.
What else? I actually watched the Falcons game as well. I'm a sucker for NFL football. The shame of the matter is that the NFL has taken quite a beating this week, pun intended.
Yeah, for sure.
More so this week than last week. We got anything else on the college football front?
I think Mr. Peacock's got that, you know, very well handled. I enjoyed listening to his
that's right,
his square plays, and I listened to that to kind of get a general idea of what all's going on, because honestly I don't start paying attention to, you know, to the games outside of, you know, SEC football until, you know, maybe the back half of the season, you know, once bowl bids, or in this case playoff seedings are going to be really up for grabs.
Playoffs. So let's go ahead and cut right now. We'll go ahead and let Mr. Peacock serenade us with his picks. He was doing a little rough early in the season. I think he was like 2-5.
Oh, was he? I haven't been keeping score.
Yeah, I didn't get to. I didn't listen to today's episode, so this will be a first time for me as well. But I do know that his lock of the week did not pan out. The Chargers happened to put it on the Sea Chickens.
You know, I was joking around about how, as dominant as the Seahawks looked in week one, I was saying that, you know, well, watch them lose to San Diego, and then the whole narrative is going to get flipped to the other side now.
Flip a descripa.
And that's exactly what happened. So, good on San Diego. I happened to start Phillip Rivers that week, so
nice.
On that point.
Nice choice.
So anyway.
So go ahead, Mr. Peacock. Let us know what's up.
Hello and welcome to Mr. Peacock's Square Plays of week number 4, football against the number, coming to you live from Midtown Atlanta. No introduction this week, you know, might have one next week. Just got a little bit busy, had other stuff to do. Hope you understand. Real quickly to recap last week, 2-3 against the number. The Georgia Southern Eagles down the road at Bobby Dodd Stadium catching 17 points, easy cover. The UMass Minutemen catching 16 points. I would like to call that an easy cover in Nashville as well, although I will say, when Vanderbilt put in Patton Robinette, I think it was in the first quarter or late in the first quarter or in the second quarter, I really started sweating that one out, because Robinette's a good ball player. He's definitely the best quarterback on their roster. I don't think there's any question about that. And I was looking at the clock and thought, you know, dadgummit, I mean, there's enough time for him to come back and, you know, really push Vanderbilt across the number in this one. And, you know, fortunately for us, that didn't work out. But I was definitely sweating it when I saw number 4 go in there. So we're sitting at 2-0, and I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting out the rain delay or the lightning delay for Georgia, South Carolina, and I'm thinking, you know, Mr. Peacock, you are turning into a shark in front of our very eyes this weekend, and unfortunately, we lost the next two. I didn't even know the score of the Florida game, honestly, until I got up Sunday morning, late morning. You know, but they were laying 18.5 points and really didn't even come close to covering. They shouldn't have even won that game. I was really impressed with Kentucky. And our five-star flop of the month on Sunday, the Seattle Seahawks laying 5.5 points, no cover against the San Diego Chargers. So 2-3 on the weekend, 4-8 on the season. You know, we are gradually ticking our percentage up. I mean, I will say that for us. We do need to start winning some weekends, though, if we're going to get above 52.5%. I'm pretty sure that math is going to require that. So there's no time like the present. And with that in mind, we're going to go ahead and get started. Game number 1, 12:30 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, Saturday. We're going to Syracuse, New York, folks. And I like the Syracuse Orange Men. We refuse to be politically correct on this program. I like the Syracuse Orange Men laying 1.5 at home against Maryland. The Terrapins are off of a tough loss last week against West Virginia. That's something of a rivalry game up there. It was a back and forth contest. It looked like Maryland was going to pull it out or at least push the thing into overtime before West Virginia hit the field goal and won. I think it was 40-37 was the final. So I think that Maryland's going to be coming into this thing a little bit drained emotionally. Syracuse is off of a very easy 40-3 road win. I think that was a final last weekend at Central Michigan. So I think you're going to get Syracuse coming into this thing in a little bit better spot mentally. Syracuse is a good home team, regardless of what they did against Villanova in the first week of the season. They generally play teams pretty tough up there in the Carrier Dome, and I'm definitely looking for that on Saturday afternoon. 66% of the public money that's been legally wagered on this contest has gone on the Maryland Terrapins. That makes me feel even better about taking Syracuse. Game number two, we are going back to the west end of Nashville, Tennessee. There is no place that Mr. Peacock has been more, as far as I can tell unscientifically. South Carolina and Vanderbilt, I was really tempted to lay the points on South Carolina, but that 22.5, I had 21.5, I don't know it. I kind of worry about getting backdoored in this one. The total to me is a lot more interesting, and I think it's a lot safer, specifically under 52.5 points. I don't think that Vanderbilt, in spite of what I said about Robinette a few moments ago, I don't think that South Carolina is going to be, I don't think that Vanderbilt's going to be able to score enough points to really keep up in this thing and to really threaten the total too terribly much. I think you're going to get a pretty flat South Carolina team. It's going to be a weird atmosphere up there in Nashville. There's going to be a lot of empty seats. It's going to be nowhere near as charged up as it was for South Carolina last week. Georgia used to go through this a lot. We would always play Tennessee and Knoxville one weekend, and then the next weekend we'd go up and play Nashville, and we're always flat because it's just a bizarro. In Nashville, we'd always be flat. It's just a bizarro atmosphere up there, and I think you're going to have some of that with South Carolina too. I think this is going to be a low-scoring, kind of ugly game. I think South Carolina's going to grind the thing out on the ground. I think they'll probably win somewhere between 20 and 30 points, but I think this thing will go very solidly under 52.5. Game number three, we are going to Mobile, Alabama. Folks, I've been through there. If I had to live anywhere in Alabama, if anybody put a gun to my head and forced me to move to Alabama, I don't know what kind of a psycho would do that, but if they did, I'd probably pick Mobile. You know, I think it's got a good feel to it. It's, you know, I mean, I kind of like being near the water anyway, but I think it's got a good feel to it. It's good barbecue down there. Stopped there on the way to LSU last year for baseball. You know, it's just good little town, I think. 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. local. I like the University of South Alabama Jaguars catching 3 points at home against Georgia Southern. This is all pretty much based on last week. Georgia Southern looked great against Tech. More accurately, Georgia Southern looked great for about 30 minutes against Tech. But, you know, I think that Southern is I think they're going to be really flat for this one, honestly. That was a game that they should have won. They absolutely should have beaten Georgia Tech last Saturday. And I think it's just kind of tough to rebound from that, you know, in-state rival and all that kind of stuff. South Alabama got beaten up pretty bad last week by Mississippi State. But, you know, I think that was the kind of thing that South Alabama was probably able to divorce themselves from it pretty quickly, I wouldn't imagine. This is the first time in a long time that South Alabama's had back-to-back home games, and I think that that's going to benefit them as well. Also, this is obviously the second game on the road for Georgia Southern. Phil Steele picked South Alabama to be his number two team in the Sun Belt and picked Georgia Southern to be number eight at the start of the year. He clearly sees South Alabama as a better team, and so do I. I like South Alabama catching 3 points at home against Georgia Southern. Now, I point out, too, 72% of legal money wagered on this contest has gone on the Georgia Southern Eagles. Game number four, we're going to the NFL. We're going back to a place that we didn't have a lot of success, and we're doing something that wasn't very successful last week. We are fading the San Diego Chargers once again. 1 p.m. Eastern, I like the Buffalo Bills laying 2.5 points at Ralph Wilson Stadium, Orchard Park, New York, against the San Diego Chargers. Look, San Diego obviously is coming off of a big emotional win last week against Seattle. They're kind of, you know, they're getting a lot of pats on the back. They're getting a lot of attention paid to them as a result of that. Really surprised a lot of people. Now they've got to fly cross country. I think this is probably the second longest trip in the NFL behind Seattle to Miami. and they've got to obviously fly all the way across the country and play an early game on Sunday. Bills have been a really good home team this year. I'm not really sold on that quarterback situation still, but I don't think it's going to matter. The Bills are playing some good defense right now, and as I say, they're playing really well at home. They got 3-0 in their sights. They can definitely smell it, and I think Jeff Klucke's Buffalo Bills are a great play, minus 2.5 points. So real quickly to recap, we're getting things started off on Saturday. I like the Syracuse Orange men laying 1.5 points at home against Maryland. Game number two, I like South Carolina and Vanderbilt playing a football game under 52.5 points. Game number three, we're going to Mobile, Alabama, where I like the South Alabama Jaguars catching 3 points at home against Georgia Southern. I was looking on their website. You can park at some strip mall and take a shuttle over to the stadium, Ladd Peebles Stadium, if you so desire. Game number four, I like the Buffalo Bills at home laying 2.5 points against the San Diego Chargers. So I wish you the best of luck, and we will be right back here tail end of next week, maybe with an introduction, maybe not. I have to come back and see.
All right, so you alluded to it earlier, but let's go ahead and dive into the NFL.
The debacle that is the NFL.
And, you know, this is going to be, when we were prepping for this particular recording, we came to the conclusion that this was going to be probably the most somber episode that we'll have, just because of the gravity of the topics at hand. It's definitely not something that we, you know, want to talk about all the time, but you can't deny the fact that, you know, the NFL and everything that's been going on with all of these various domestic violence situations, it's, you know, there's hardly anything else to talk about. You know, it's dominated the landscape for the better part of, you know, at least the last week and a half.
So, yeah, I mean, and like you said, I don't really enjoy talking about it, but I feel like it's a subject that needs to be addressed. So we'll go ahead and get started. We hinted at Adrian Peterson being a child beater last week, and it turns out there's more information on the subject. You want to go on? You want to do a quick rundown of what happened?
Yeah. So, you know, when things initially started coming out about Adrian Peterson, I think the smart thing that everybody was doing was kind of reserving judgment. You know, let's get the whole story, and let's kind of see, you know, let's see all the facts in front of us before, you know, before we start to pass judgment, you know, in the court of public opinion. But now, with a lot of those facts out in the open, things haven't gotten better. In fact, they've definitely gotten markedly worse.
I actually came out and stated when I first heard the story that I read, granted I was misinformed, I had heard that it was an 11-year-old that was beat with a switch. And to me, as a kid that grew up, you know, I'm an 80s baby, so I grew up in the previous generation. What are we, Gen X, I guess?
I think, yeah.
I grew up in that generation and in the South, and it's not unheard of to hear about kids getting disciplined with a switch. I mean, it's pretty much commonplace, as far as I know, in the South. I mean, maybe not so much these days, but at least when we were coming up, you know, I can remember a handful of times that I got the belt, you know, three, I would say,
yeah,
and that's all
sure.
It took, because I knew not to fuck around.
Yeah, you know? And I think it was interesting because when the story first broke, you know, what, maybe 2 weeks ago, the local radio shows here were actually having to explain what a switch was, because it came out, you know, that he had hit one of his kids with a switch. I mean, I immediately knew exactly what was going on, and I was thinking the same thing. Well, to me, it really wasn't a big deal. You know, I mean, it seemed a little bit overblown. You know, and that they were just making it a story because it was Adrian Peterson. But
right.
You know, now that we have more of the facts out there, it is serious. You know, he is facing indictment from a grand jury, and you know, things are looking really, you know, really questionable for Peterson. I mean, not only in the short term, but, you know, possibly in the long term.
So, as it turns out, it wasn't an 11-year-old, it was a 4-year-old. And right. He was not only beat with a switch, but beat to the point that it left some gruesome scarring in some areas, sensitive areas, gonards areas. I didn't know a wolfman had nards. Sorry, I gotta make a joke about it, otherwise it's gonna be a real somber pod. But anyway, the point is that he took it a little too far. And I was listening. I never listened to Colin Cowherd, but shouts out to Colin Cowherd for addressing this article that he had read that really gave me new insight on the situation. As it turns out, another woman came forward with another incident with her child fathered by Mr. Adrian Peterson.
Right, right. So, I mean, here, let me set up the timeline real quick, and I'll try to go through this as fast as we can so we don't bog down. So, according to the police report that was filed, this happened on May 18th of this year. This is when Peterson, you know, hit his 4-year-old, you know, disciplined him with a switch. You know, the thing is, like, the other side discussion on that was that he made him, like, stuff leaves in his mouth, and he has a room specific for, you know, disciplining, you know, his kids. It seems like, you know, once those facts started coming out, you started to wonder, like, what exactly, how deep does this does this story actually go? So after that police, you know, report is filed, he testified in front of a grand jury. This is in August 21st. September 4th of this year, he's not indicted by that grand jury. So, you know, and again, this is all stuff that surfaced after the fact. So now here we go into September 12th. He's indicted for reckless or negligent injury to a child by
a lesser charge. A lesser charge.
Yeah, I don't know how it I didn't get the details on it. I'm not sure if it was a lesser, you know, if he was, they're trying to get him for actual child abuse, and this is considered a lesser charge. But the second grand jury, regardless, did see it fit that he did enough to warrant, getting indicted. I mean, it's, you know, for you and me, you know, we may see things differently. We may see it as, you know, as more or less of a crime, I guess you could call it. But all thing, you know, that aside, the grand jury and the judge overseeing the case and, you know, experts said, you know, agreed that this is enough to indict. So, you know, it was bad enough, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
It was enough to warrant indictment. The punishment, you know, remains to be seen on that indictment, correct?
Right.
The thing is that, you know, and I'm not trying to defend his case whatsoever. Maybe Adrian Peterson needs to revisit the way that he is choosing to raise his children, you know, and break the mold, you know, whereas he's just perpetuating the cycle. So I'm not making an excuse for him, but he did, you know, he was raised in a terrible setting in Texas, you know, where this barbaric punishment, as some would see it, was seen as commonplace.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a classic case of, you know, being the product of your environment. And just to speed things up. So let me finish going through this. So because of that, you know, that indictment, the Vikings, to me, did the right thing. They deactivated him for week two. So, you know, I mean, that made sense to me. You know, the whole situation was still pending, but it didn't make sense to have, you know, to have that, to have somebody, you know, like that with that hanging over their head, you know, playing in the game. So, I mean, the initial thought was good on the Vikings for doing that. Now, the problem that I had was days after the Vikings got blown out by the Patriots, they reinstated him, and he was, you know, fully expected to play in week three. You know, so it was like, you know, and we talked about it, you know, in last episode that, well, you know, good job, you know, the Vikings did the right thing for 1 week. You know, and then they went right back because, you know, at the end of the day, they're trying to do what's best for the team, and what's best for the team is having their, you know, well, who is probably a Hall of Fame running back, suiting up for them on, you know, on game day. Then, you know, so just to wrap on Peterson's side of things, where he stands, he was placed on the this exempt list. So he's basically on paid administrative leave. You know, we'll compare it to, you know, other, you know, other walks of life. You know, he's you know, he's still on the roster. He's still on the payroll, but he is not active for the time being. I mean, that makes the most sense to me. You know, at least while more of the legal process plays out.
You know, and I disagree with that. He should be suspended without pay. I mean, if we're actually going to hand out disciplinary action here, let's go ahead and take away the pay. Because honestly, like, when it comes down to it, I don't care who you are. It's not about the glory. You know, it's a paycheck. I shouldn't say I don't care who you are. I'm sure there's outliers and exceptions out there. For the vast majority of the league, kids play in the NFL to live that lifestyle, to have that luxury. Right. And, you know, let's actually hit them where it hurts, you know,
right.
like Goodell did to Ray Rice, you know, suspended indefinitely. And the Ravens did the right thing by immediately letting him go, terminating his contract.
So. Yeah. And that's the thing. That's going to be a good comparison point, you know, and to kind of see how those two situations, while similar enough, I mean, they are also uniquely different in some instances. So we'll see how, you know, how the Vikings play it compared to how the Ravens play it. So getting into it now, let's move on to another part of that situation. Now you're looking at the Vikings as a team. So they're gutted. I mean, imagine your fantasy team losing, you know, your top five, you know, pick for this year.
One of my fantasy teams, I happened to lose Adrian Peterson. I picked him number 2 overall.
There you go. So, I mean, that's a good way to understand and to relate to how devastating this, you know, this turn of events is. I mean, he's unavailable, and I mean, that's going to hurt the team.
It's costing me money right now.
Yeah, and it's going to cost the Vikings money as well. So, the thing there is. And before they suspended him, the correlation was going to be on another player that was on the Vikings, Chris Cook, who the Vikings, when he got arrested, when Chris Cook got arrested, he was suspended without pay. So the immediate line being drawn there is, well, why does one player get this treatment and this other player get this treatment?
Because you're talking about Chris Cook and the Adrian Peterson.
Exactly. That's what it all boils down to. That's the exact point I wanted to bring up. I mean, because I bet half of our listeners are wondering, dude, who the hell's Chris Cook? And that illustrates the point exactly. If you're Adrian Peterson's backup with a backup to his backup, you're going to get terminated. If you're Adrian Peterson, you're gonna get, you know, you're gonna get put on this paid leave until things are, you know, more clearly resolved. So, the Vikings now have quickly come out and started looking like they did back in the early 2000s when they had those back-to-back scandals where you had the Love Boat incident, you know, where they had, they were having all those boat parties, you know, and allegations of exact, you know, of things going on, you know, on that, on that party boat. And then you had also one of my personal favorite scandals, the Wizinator, you know, as made famous by former Oregon Duck Ontario
Quack.
Smith.
Right. The let's go ahead and get off this topic, man. The thing is that I honestly feel like we're beating a dead horse here, pun intended. It's such an atrocious situation. I don't feel like the Vikings have acted swiftly enough. You know, and it just goes to show, like, there's a different class of athlete, just like there's a different class of student, just like there's a different class of insert profession here.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
You're given preferential treatment.
Yeah, I think that's the clear bottom line here. There's no two ways around it. You know, it's there is a difference between, you know, like you said, there is a class difference. you know, in all walks of life, I'd say.
And for equality's sake, I hope that when this is all finalized, Goodell suspends him indefinitely. You know, let's go ahead and take the same. Because how do you differentiate between beating your wife versus beating your kid? You know, they're both wrong. They're both atrocious. They both should never occur, you know. And it's if he doesn't act as harshly as he acted in the Ray Rice situation, then Goodell will be frowned upon yet again. And to me, it's time for him to go, man. I'm done.
Yeah, it's yeah, Goodell has definitely been under fire, and he had his press conference today. And you know, the one thing that really stood out in my mind, he was asked, you know, throughout all of this, has he considered, you know, to what level has he considered making changes? And he said, you know, himself that he was, you know, everything is in play. You know, meaning that he's willing to look at everything possible to fix the situation that the NFL is facing right now, as well as making it a better, you know, league going forward. And it was followed up then with the question of, well, would that mean that you would consider stepping down as commissioner? And he said that he never took that, you know, thought of that option.
Of course not, because what's good for him is that he retains his job as the basically CEO of a multi-billion dollar corporation that the NFL is. And honestly, I've been on the fence with Goodell for at least the past 5 years. I mean, he's basically transformed the NFL into, the joke was, the no fun league.
And it's really become that now.
Yeah, he sanctioned Ocho Cinco for some hilarious end zone dances and antics like that. I mean, but not only that, he also turned the league into an offensive-only league. I mean, with all the new rules he's instated, he's given the leg up to the offense. You basically can't touch a wide receiver anymore.
Yeah.
You can't tackle a quarterback. You know, there's going to be a strike zone enforced, you know,
pretty much
a hit zone. He's basically, I call it the sissification of the league, man. I mean, this is why you have teams like the 2008 New England Patriots, who go 16-0, straight running through teams with a spread offense, because the league is now geared towards that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, for me, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, I think offense is what gets the more casual fan involved. No, you know, people want to see Falcons 56, Bucks 14. They don't want to see Falcons 10, Bengals 24. You know what I'm saying?
10-3, something like that. Yeah. I get that, man. And you know, I understand that you're wanting to capture the audience and keep, you know, pumping in new generations of fans who want to see video game like offenses.
Exactly.
Shout out to Chip Kelly. Put up video game style numbers, but I just think it's, you know, this is why you have teams like the 2009 Saints, the 2006 Colts, and you could even say the 2014 Falcons, where a high-powered offense runs through the entire league because it's geared that way. And it's not, I don't know, man. Again, it's me being old and me thinking that, you know, I like watching defensive matchups and things like that, man. So I'm just...
Well, I like to see a little bit of defense because, you know, look back when the Rams, you know, when the greatest show on turf was around, there was still some semblance of defense. And
some
I think
semblance.
That was, you know, I mean, and I think that was, you know, Torrey Holt, you know, and all those guys, Marshall Faulk, you
Kurt
know,
Warner.
Kurt Warner.
Name a defensive starter on the team.
On that team?
Point proven.
Yeah. I thought I could pull like a defensive lineman.
The only other name that I can think of that was on that team, Orlando Pace. He was an offensive lineman, though. Like, I couldn't name a defensive starter on that team.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a very good point. But you know, I think there was still a semblance of defense. I mean, now you're looking at it's not crazy to think that quarterbacks can throw for 5,000 yards.
Right. I mean, Peyton Manning threw what, 55 touchdowns last year?
Yeah. I mean, that's absurd.
That's ridiculous. Marino's record was what, 40?
Yeah, I mean, he shattered it by a long shot. I mean, you look at great teams from 10, 20 years ago, and you know, they didn't throw it 50 times in maybe three games. But you know, it's an evolution of the game. You know, and has Goodell accelerated that? He most certainly has. You know, with the way that he's chosen to, you know, to implement, you know, new rules, new penalties, and what have you. So,
how do you think Goodell reacts to this Jonathan Dwyer situation?
You know,
he's immediately deactivated, right? Or was that the Cardinals?
The Cardinals did that.
Okay, so the Cardinals did the right thing.
Yeah. So, you know, it's that's the thing that bothers me about Goodell, is he's wildly inconsistent, even in this, even in just these particular situations where it's some kind of violence out, you know, off the field. You know, Ray Rice was only suspended for 2 games with the allegations of what happened, and then he gets suspended indefinitely after they see the video and confirm the fact, you know, that it was as bad as was being rumored. Peterson wasn't suspended at all while things were pending. Greg Hardy hasn't been suspended yet, and he was actually arrested on those charges, on his charges. Like, he's actually been officially charged, and yet he was never suspended. You know, Jonathan Dwyer, again, it's just so, there's just so many inconsistencies with how he's handed out punishment. That, you know, they need to get that part sorted out.
It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable, man. As the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company, you have to make tough decisions, and you have to make consistent decisions. It's just, it's how you run a business.
I mean, it's not even a tough decision. I mean, it's just, you're just supposed to get, you're supposed to have, like, a course of action already in place. You know, it's like he's just making shit up as he goes along. You know, and that's what it seemed like at this press conference today, was that he doesn't really know. He didn't have like a series of, you know, okay, well, here's first offense, second offense, third offense. You know, it's like it never really entered his frame of mind. And that bothers me when you're a $44 million salary commissioner of a professional football, of a professional sports league.
So just quickly, yeah, I agree. And, I hate to recap, but we'll go ahead and give a quick rundown on what happened with Jonathan Dwyer. He's, of course, denied all allegations. He accepted responsibility for the incidents, but denied any assault allegations. So we don't know how her nose got broken. We just know that the nose got broken.
Right. And that he had, like, an injury on his forehead.
Somebody call up Johnny Cochran. He's playing the Chewbacca defense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he headbutted his wife, broke her nose. Wound up punching her in the face the next day because he was still pissed. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he's a real
winner. Shout out to Auburn. Wasn't Dwyer? Dwyer was an Auburn cat. Cam Newton.
No. You're thinking Dyer. Jonathan Dwyer is a Georgia Tech grad.
No shit.
Yeah, he is a proud alum
of the triple option
of Georgia Tech.
Shout out to the Rambling Wreck. You are a rambling train wreck right now, Mr. Yeah. Dwyer.
Jonathan Dwyer wrecking his wife's face.
Wow.
But yeah. So, I mean, beyond that, not only did he, you know, put hands on his wife, he also threw a shoe at their 17-month-old and hit him. Maybe it hit off a bounce or something like that. Maybe he wasn't trying to hit the child. I mean,
He plays running back, not quarterback.
Right. And, but point is, man, it's like, I don't know. I mean, for me personally, I just couldn't imagine. How mad would you have to get to say, I'm going to, like, try to physically harm, no matter how much or how little, you know, my own young child? I can't even fathom that. So, you know,
keep it classy, Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
So, did you want to talk about the course of action, or should we go straight into opinion?
Well, I think the main thing is, and this is kind of, this is my opinion here, is that, like we mentioned, there needs to be a very clear-cut, you know, course here. You know, if you do this, or if there's allegations of this, and it's serious, then they need to just go ahead and make it so you get deactivated, or that teams automatically say, hey, we're going to deactivate you
and we're not paying you.
Well, I mean, that's up for debate. Because, see, then the thing that worries me is if you're going to say, hey, we're going to deactivate players without pay, then you're going to have all the accusations. It's going to be a situation because, let's call it for what it is. If a woman, claims abuse or rape or something along those lines, the odds are stacked against the male that's involved in the situation.
Right.
Now, it more than likely is probably true, but it paints them into a corner immediately, and I don't think that we need to further that by saying, hey, if you are accused of this particular incident, you're suspended without pay.
See, I take it the opposite angle. I think it almost de-incentivizes coming forth with the truth, because if you're Ray Rice's wife and you come out, with allegations and he gets suspended without pay immediately, you stop eating good. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, that may be the case, but I think that ultimately, another flip to that is that, well, maybe it's just going to accelerate the divorce process for them anyway. And, when you go to court for your support and for your, for the division of your assets, they're not going to care that you're currently suspended without pay. I mean, that never works out. You're going to get boned in court, too. You're going to get effed in the pee.
In the middle of the courthouse, in front of
everyone. Yeah, the judge is going to jump on top of his, stand and scream that.
But, so my thing is, and this is a recap with a little bit of insight given from the same Colin Cowherd broadcast, and I wish I could remember the name of the dude. I want to say it was Album that wrote the article. So if anyone's out there listening and they heard this and they're aware of this article, send it to me, because I would like to read the article in full. But my thing is that professional football players, they play in a violent sport. They're basically paid very well to execute, pun intended, orchestrated violence at their job. This is their 9-to-5. Like, they're paid to be savages, right, with no regard to a lesser, a weaker opponent. So how far-fetched is it to believe that it might be difficult for them to turn that switch off when they're not in the field?
Right. And here's the thing, too, because then people will say, well, you've got to be able to do that. But here's the thing. Maybe it's not even so much a switch, but it kind of just becomes, maybe it is a light switch, but the more you get into that mode, the more you're in that mindset, that mind state all the time. It's not so much that you can't turn the switch off, but it gets so blurry that you can't even find it necessarily. So it's hard to, you just become desensitized is what I'm getting at. It's the classic violent video games and desensitization. So, I think that could play a role as well, where, like you said, it does become a situation where they just have that in their mind where they're just kind of predisposed to that.
Right. And, these guys have been brought up their entire lives, basically groomed since they were an adolescent to go hard or go home, right, and to destroy, what's presented to them as a weaker opponent, and impose their will. They've basically been raised to believe that they are gods amongst men. And when you think about the circumstances, I'm not excusing this type of behavior, but it makes it a little bit easier to understand why they feel like they can impose their will on a weaker person at any time. Like you said, it blurs the line. Like, there is no line, you know?
And I think that, I think it's also, there's a lot of different layers to it. You've also got that privileged aura that a lot of these guys, if you make it in the NFL, even as the 53rd man on a roster, the chances, the percentage of that happening are so slim that you have been probably athletic enough throughout your career that you were probably, privileged at the college level and definitely at the high school level. So I think it kind of helps to breed that mentality of, like Jameis Winston, I can do whatever the hell I want.
I'm of a different class.
Yeah.
I don't subscribe to the rules.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is.
Peasants, And I think it's disillusionment. Disillusioning? I don't know. But the point is that they're raised to believe that they don't have to subscribe to the rules of society, because they can either hide behind their athleticism and the fact that they will be protected by the Tallahassee Police Department, or throw money at the problem and it just goes away. You know, this is how they've lived their lives for, you know, the entire time. So what's to make the, you know, how can they feel any different?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's what leads players to go with the classic, do you know who the hell I am?
Exactly.
When they get pulled over by police.
And who was it that handed over a football card, or was it a baseball card, with his picture on it? He didn't have ID on him. Wow. And he was like, you know who the fuck I am?
Yeah, I mean, that's just
or was it Tony La Russa? Who was it that
I know Tony La Russa did his ABCs in some kind of foreign language when he got pulled over, you know, driving under the influence. But, you know, I mean, I think the bottom line there is that, yeah, there's an aura of privilege. And for a long time, you know, these guys just don't, you know, have never really, you know, had to play by the rules.
I feel like as a student athlete especially, you're subject to a different set of rules. I mean, you are, in fact, a different class of student when you are a student athlete. You should be held to a higher standard, because you not only represent yourself and your team, but your school as well, right? You know, and the other, you know, 30 to 60,000 kids you're going to school with, you know, have to walk around and hear about, you know, all Seminoles get free crab legs, you know, things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, in a perfect world, that's how it would be, you know, that the more privileged, you know, will be more responsible and more conscious of what they're given, and, you know, and reciprocate, you know, that to others, you know.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Exactly.
And to my last summation of the topic is that as an athlete, you're given elevated status. You know, but you should be held to an elevated standard because of this gift you've been given. You know,
Well, you know, here's the thing. I always like to fall back on Charles Barkley's commercial from the early 90s when he was talking about how he is not a role model. I think that I don't want to take away from the fact that, you know, that, like you said, if you have more, you need to be more responsible with it because you've been given more. I don't even want them to be more responsible. I just want people to just stop being stupid.
Right.
I mean, to me, that's right. What it boils down to. Like, you don't necessarily have to, you know, be Mother Teresa. Dude, just don't be a dumbass. That's all people are probably asking.
If you're the tail end, I kind of trailed off there. The tail end of my last opinion was that, hey, if you're looking for role models, you're better served by looking elsewhere, you know, than professional sports.
Yeah, I mean, look at your
and
teachers.
The NFL. Right. Look at the people in your community, the upstanding members of your community, you know, somebody at church, you know.
There you go.
Look at the matriarch or patriarch of your family. I mean, basically look anywhere else besides the pool of professional athletes that we have playing these days, because they're not exactly the best role models, unless you're talking about John Stockton.
Tim Tebow.
Or that sort of person. But anyhow, let's go ahead and wrap, taking a moment of silence for all the families involved with this violence that we've been seeing in the NFL today. I'd like to also go ahead and extend this moment of silence for someone that's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
It's tough, man. I get choked up just thinking about it.
I'm kind of struggling myself.
I need to go ahead and take another shot of Jamie. But it's with great regret that I have to inform you FCKers that our fan favorite, friend of the podcast, Mr. Delonte West, will not be suiting up for an NBA team this next year.
At least not yet.
You're right. You know, there's still hope.
Not yet.
There's still hope.
I hope there's got to be like an exit clause in that contract that he signed. What do you say he signed?
He signed a one-year deal. He will suit up for the Shanghai Sharks next year, a Chinese team owned by none other than Mr. Bitch Please himself, Yao Ming. So he'll be playing overseas wearing Starberry shoes and
eating chow mein
and probably playing center for his team. Who knows?
Point center.
The best comment that I saw on CBS Sports, shout out to LNL. I didn't see a Twitter handle or Facebook handle, otherwise I would have reached out to Mr. or Mrs. LNL for comment. But they said, well, is Delonte taking his guitar case and LeBron's mom to China with him?
You know, it's possible. I mean, you have to talk to LeBron's mom. Yeah, that'd be quite a culture shock. But all the best to Delonte. I still stand by, you know, what I've said previously. I think you could do far worse at the backup point guard, savvy veteran, you know, position.
Combo guard.
Yeah, than Delonte West. I mean, there's a lot of questionable backups.
If you're looking for a combo guard that can distribute the ball and score 20 points, look no further than Mr. Delonte West. Somebody give him a call.
I'd give him a call if I had an NBA team.
Man, you best believe. What Vancouver Volcanoes probably need a combo guard.
There you go, man. Make it happen, Volcanoes.
Who? So
Delonte.
Yeah, for real. I know I'd buy season tickets if Delonte was out here.
For sure. I'd rock a jersey, man.
So move it along. Let's readdress some of the corrections that we had from last week. I got to eat a bunch of crow, man, because I was saying that Danny Ferry was just reading off of a transcript and probably laughing at some racist-ass joke that Guerin fed him on a sheet of paper.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing man. Is, I think everybody thought that.
You heard know? The interview, right?
Well, yeah, then we heard the audio that was, you know, that was from that actual, you know, kind of a, you know, meeting, you know, a team meeting. And it was not, if he was reading, then... he had memorized that script to the T.
You know how you can hear when a battle rapper is spitting written lines versus when he's freestyling? You can tell when his style and context changes,
right.
His tone and delivery changes. Yeah, Danny Ferry wasn't reading.
No, he wasn't. And I think that's the thing that upset me the most, was that I wanted to believe that he was just reading a... you know, off of the notes of a, you know, from a scout in regards to Luol Deng. But, and you know, that may still be the case. I mean, maybe he read it, he was going through it really quickly, and he just paraphrased it and just wanted to hit that because he was having an off day and it was a Friday. He wanted to get the hell out of there. And he said, I mean, regardless of what the situation, you know, the reasons were, again, I'm not, you know, it's just like the NFL players, man. I'm not asking you to be Mother Teresa. Just don't be a dumbass. Like, how do you not filter that and not say, I'm not going to say that he has a little African in him.
Am I your man, Mr. Dumbass?
Exactly what he did. I mean, and you know, the audio clip, it makes it seem like, you know, I mean, it just seemed like he was just talking, and that was him.
It was off the cuff. It was off the cuff, man. The way that it came off to me was that he was like, he's, you know, he's not the perfect character. He's of questionable character. He's got a little African in him. You know,
but, you know,
he said he may be, you know, showing you one thing and then selling phony gold to you out the back, man. Basically, what he's saying is he could be two-faced. Like, he's choir boy, he's John Stockton when the coaches are around, but as soon as everyone leaves, he's complaining to the teammates about his bobblehead is the last one given out for free.
Right. And, I mean, I think that somewhere, the truth lies somewhere in between the two points there. I'm hoping that it's not... as bad as it seems, but it sure as hell sounded like it, you know, when that audio surfaced. So the question then is, do the Hawks need a new GM at this point?
I really was hoping that Ferry would build the San Antonio East.
And he
in
was
Atlanta.
Well on his way.
He was, but he's done. There's no way.
Yeah,
he's
suspended,
suspended indefinitely as of September 12th. Paid leave.
Yeah,
of
course. he took an indefinite paid leave. He hasn't been suspended. In fact, Adam Silver said that comparing the situation to Sterling, he did not feel that it was something where he should be fired. So you have that. You know, it's not as bad as it sounds. But like you said, I have a hard time thinking that he can continue under that capacity.
Nah, not in a city like Atlanta that is predominantly black. You know, he might get away with that shit out here in whitewashed Portland, but nah, I don't know. I don't think he can come back from that.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tough sell, and you know it sucks because, like you said, it seemed like he was. You know, we talked about this earlier today. You know, just when the ball got rolling, then you mess around and roll that ball off a freaking 100-foot cliff.
Yup.
You know, now you got to start all over again. So, I mean, so it looks like, yeah, we might need a new GM. I mean, our coach, you know, Coach Budenholzer is, according to the CEO, he is assuming oversight of the basketball operations department, and he will report directly to Steve Kuhnel, the CEO. I don't know. I mean, I don't even know. I don't know what to say. I hope that, you know, that they can keep the ball rolling, but I'm a little bit upset, and I think that they're gonna take a little bit of a step back after you lose, you know, or presumably lose your general manager.
Yeah, another step back for the Atlanta Hawks. Her right in the. I mean, I'm so
Jameis?
Sick.
Jameis Winston here.
I just imagine Jameis like hopping up on the table and going Jerry Maguire with that, like the show me the money, except the fucker in the.
I just can't imagine a situation where somebody would do that. But
no.
But again, you know, that's the life and the world of a superstar athlete.
So it's here's just, what
they
we
don't
know.
Live in our world.
They don't. Here's what we know. We will have a new owner, hopefully Dominique Wilkins.
I'd love to see Neek, you know, spearhead an ownership group a la Magic Johnson with the Dodgers.
Yep. He will most likely need a new GM.
Yep.
And we'll discuss that at length, maybe next episode, who's available, who's on the radar. Breaking news, one of the six unnamed buyers is Twitter broke the news that is Gucci Mane, and
<It's>
he's
Gucci.
Owner of the worst face tattoo in the history of face tattoos.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that was done tongue in cheek.
I'm hoping that was done lightning bolt on cheek.
Yeah, ice cream, you know, ice cream on cheek. But you know, hey, whatever, man. I mean, I don't think there's any way. I mean, I'm sure that Gucci's made a lot of money. I don't think you've made. Purchase an NBA team kind of money.
However, he vowed to bring back not only Jay Smoove, not only Jamal Crawford, but also Joe Johnson. So he's taking it back to 2010 on him.
There you go. You know, I think you said it best. You know, what'd you say?
I wouldn't mind if Joe Johnson came back to Atlanta, just as long as he leaves his contract in Brooklyn.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, that was, like I said, Danny Ferry should have won GM of the century, and they should have gone ahead and erected a statue for him when he got rid of Joe Johnson. And
straight.
That albatross of a contract that he had.
Leased him. Shout out. What up, Jay-Z?
Yeah.
How you liking that Joe Johnson contract?
Yeah.
Jay-Z's
yeah.
not even the owner anymore,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like he
was,
sold
yeah.
his thing.
Yeah. He was like, man, Danny Ferry F me right in the P.
He was
about
like,
to be out.
The Rock is in the building, but I'm out.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what else, man? What else? What else?
Hawks.
What
that
a
really
mess.
Me, that really does.
What a mess. That's all I got, man.
You know, one thing, and I'll try to keep this quick. There was a conspiracy involving, and this is so Atlanta Hawks and Spirit ownership group, because you know they've had their issues, to say the least, since they own the team. So the outgoing majority owner, Bruce Levinson, his group is the group based out of Washington D.C. Steve Belkin was bought out. He was further up in the New England area. So the Atlanta-based group, headed up by Michael Guerin Jr. Now the conspiracy is that Guerin did not want Danny Ferry hired to begin with. He said that he was worried that his personality and Danny Ferry's personality was going to become an issue as far as running the team and you know, operations go. Danny Ferry is known to be kind of a, I mean, not necessarily like short-tempered, but he's very, I think he's probably a combination of, you know, he's very to the point and he's very
racist,
set in his ways. You know, he's got a little African in him.
He's just a little bit, man. You know? I mean, it's not like a lot.
Look, I mean, all I'm saying is, I mean, it's not nearly as inflammatory.
Look, he owns 5 blood diamonds, okay? There, yeah. I said it.
You know, it's, if it wasn't for the Clippers situation, I think this would have been a, you know, far less of a mess for Ferry to step in. That's all I'm saying. It doesn't seem to me as nearly as bad as what, you know, old man Sterling, you know, was saying. But, you know, that aside, so the whole issue there was that Guerin didn't want Danny Ferry hired. Bruce Levinson, the majority owner, pushed the hire forward anyway. And so there's your rift between the two of the owners in the, you know, in this whole equation. So the conspiracy is that that Guerin set up this conference call late in the week, late in the afternoon, knowing that, you know, how Danny Ferry would be in that environment, basically
knowing,
setting it up.
Right, knowing that everyone just wanted to get the hell out of the office.
Exactly.
And go fuck her right in the...
Yeah, they wanted to go... They did not want to be bogged down with a meeting. So, you know, if that's what he did, then it was a clever ploy, and, you know, Ferry walked right into it, and then he... You know, he when he stepped in the, you know, on the mine, he blew Levinson up right alongside him because he was forced Levinson. Shortly, decided to sell his, you know, his interest in the team to Danny Ferry. In this mess that he's in.
Special
herbs. Yeah, I think it never bodes well when you have a power struggle at the beginning of a hire, you know, a new hire.
Yeah,
that's never a good sign. And yeah, I wasn't really too concerned about it because I figured, you know what. Ferry will come in. Little did I know he was just going to straight up fleece the Brooklyn Nets into taking Joe Johnson's atrocious contract off our hands. But I figure, you know what? You put a bunch of wins on the board, and everyone all of a sudden, STF.
Yeah, that's very true. I think I think this has been a long-standing issue, you know, with the Hawks having so many, cooks in there spoiling. Maybe we should try doing design, playing the keys, you know, because, I mean, it's good to have different things. But, I mean, in this case, I mean, this is fraction contracting the gout, you know, while I'm signing the contracts and I'm checking all the out. Contacts. Claiming, you know, thanks for coming. Shit, you know, send you a gift basket and, you know, on, you know, Christmas. But that's it. You know, don't let the door hit you on the way out.
The city is the major stakeholder in Phillips Arena, right?
Yes, the city owns Phillips. So Mayor Reed, he's come out and said that, you know, that he and the city want to do everything they can, and they anticipate, you know, that the Hawks will stay in Atlanta. As soon as this broke about, you know, about the majority ownership being sold, immediately Seattle started chirping, talking about, we want to buy that team.
Of course,
to Seattle.
Of course they would. And man, I would just be so hurt if that were the case, because I would have to be a fan of it.
Yeah,
I would have to then become a Seattle. You think they would be the Sonics again?
I think eventually, yeah, because you saw like the Hornets, New Orleans go back to the. I'm sorry, no, that Charlotte went back to the Hornets and after New Orleans.
No more Fly Pelican Fly.
Yeah, well, New Orleans has that, and then Charlotte got the Hornets. Hornets back. So.
Yeah, I hope that. I mean, the team's gonna stay in Atlanta. I'm not hoping anything. I know the team will stay in Atlanta. That is a basketball loving city. You know, when I was in Atlanta in June, I was doing the tourist thing, and in one day walking around at the Georgia Aquarium, I saw not one, but two full neck tattoos of, you know, the Undertaker tattoo, like across the base of the neck of the Atlanta Hawk, man. The
Birdman,
like,
tattoo.
Man, that's commitment right there, dude. Like, that city loves the Hawks, man.
Yeah, it's a great city. It's a great sports city. You know, we've talked about this before. I mean, I just can't understand why we can't get a good product together.
Why we keep fielding mediocre teams?
Yeah, I mean, is it just that bad? And again, that's part of what really upsets me about this whole Danny Ferry thing, was because it seemed like he had that on lock, like he had things figured out, and we were about to be something, you know.
Let's just hope that the way this all shakes down still leaves Danny Ferry as the Hawks GM, and let's hope that we can actually make a return, a respectable return to the playoffs. No more of that first round and done.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing that I just randomly thought of now is maybe we can go ahead and grab Sam Presti out of OKC and become our new GM, just pie in the sky type of situation. But, you know, that's a small market team. Yeah, that's never going to go over the salary cap, and Kevin Durant's due, and they're going to have to start blowing that roster up pretty soon. So maybe new ownership group headed by the human highlight film can throw some money out there and get somebody that can, you know, put a product out there and build something. You know,
or the ice cream man, you know, Gucci Mane.
It's Gucci.
He can handle his biz. Who knows? But, you know, thanks for listening, y'all. We love what we do. So, you know, sports talk off the cuff, that's what we're best at. With an Atlanta East Coast bias, of course. We are the FCK Podcast. Make sure you check out the YouTube channel, check out the Facebook, and most importantly, check us out on theclicknation.com.
Till next time, stay fresh, y'all.